Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome to Siempre Palante. Palante. Siempre Palante.
Welcome, mi gente, to Siempre Palante, Always Forward, a podcast that is culture-driven, focused on familia, overcoming adversity, and legacy. I'm your host, Gerardo Luis Alvarez. Gracias for listening. In this episode, you will hear from two líderes in the Latino community working tirelessly to ensure that the National Museum of the American Latino becomes a reality in the Smithsonian. Our guests will share about the past, present, and future of the museum, why it's personal to them, and how their familia inspired them to become the leaders they are today. I introduce to you the friends of the National Museum of the American Latino, President and CEO Estuardo Rodriguez, and Board Chair Lily Gil Valletta. So what is the Latino Museum Project?
So I will go ahead and get started. And first of all, thank you for having us. We're so excited. Any chance we get to talk about this great project, we are front of the line and we appreciate it, because the big headline is that American history is not complete without the American Latino history woven into it. So I am opening to answer your question just by saying that we're here to manifest and make sure we support the building of a Smithsonian National American Latino Museum, which now is no longer an aspiration. It is a bill. It is the law of the land. And we are now beginning this beginning of the building of that. But I think Estuardo, who's here with us, who's been at it for much longer than me, can give you the specifics. And again, as you said in your intro, I'm Lily Gil Valletta, chairing the Friends of the American Latino Museum Board. But Estuardo can give you the backstory into how this whole thing started. So, Es, take us back into memory lane and where this project comes from.
Me presentaste como secreto. It's like deep secret. Let me just connect you with. Yeah, the deep, dark secret of this campaign. Thank you so much, primero, amigo. It's just great. As Lily said, every opportunity we will jump on to talk about this initiative, because it will take everyone, as it has for some 20 some years now. I mean, this seed was planted in 1994 in a report that was put together and led by Raul Izaguirre, the founder of NCLR, which is now Unidos US. That report basically laid out that the Smithsonian had almost surgically removed U.S. Latino stories. It's amazing to think that we had to go to that extent to find out why these stories that were clearly 500 years worth of contributions to our nation, why they were absent in our nation's most important and iconic museums. And so that seed was planted in 1994. And then finally in 2004, the legislation was presented to open up the American Latino Museum, to present the possibility, the creation of a commission to study the opening of an American Latino Museum. And it's taken a village since then, bipartisan all the way. Finally, we were able to see this legislation pass in December of 2020. And now Lily gets to lead the arduous task of making sure that we make good on our promise. And the promise not just of raising the money, but the promise of making sure this museum is built on the National Mall as we know it, between the Lincoln Memorial and the U.S. Capitol. And so while we think we've gotten to the finish line, we have not.
Take us a little deeper into the roles that you play, Estuardo, as you talked about Lily and some of the things you do. But let's get a little deeper. Let's peel back that onion a little bit. Let's cook a little bit more with Sazon here. Your voices in the community, the bio is extensive. The platform you have when you speak, people stop what they're doing and they listen, the both of you. So it's important to understand the roles, because we're very humble, but here's the time to share what's going on as far as your roles.
Well, I'll start, because as I got onboarded as the new chair, I had Danny Vargas, who was the chair before me, involved from the very beginning as part of the commission, and Estuardo basically coaching me and us, all of the new members of the board, into what is it that we do. I'm a very simple person. I think I can remember 1, 2, 3. So here's the 1, 2, 3s. We're definitely here and exist to advocate. I think we cannot do enough of that. And what that means is reestablishing the priority that we play in American history, our power in numbers, the fact that we are 60 plus million strong and driving 50% of the population growth of this country. If we were a nation on its own, we would be like the fourth largest economy in the world, and the numbers go on and on. We have the voice and the power to advocate and claim that position on the national mall, getting the right budgets and appropriations, as well as getting this approved as we did last December. Now, the second thing we need to do is amplify. So the more of us speaking about this, the better, because that basically confirms, not just for Latinos, but for everyone in America, the fact that this is something we should all be proud of, because it is over 500 years of American history that have many components of American Latinos, from fighting in every single American war dating back to before the Revolutionary War, all the way back to understanding that the first language spoken in the United States was Spanish and not English, and that the oldest city is St. Augustine, which is before Jamestown, and the list goes on and on of fun facts like that. So we got to amplify it and own it proudly. And the third thing is fundraising, which unapologetically, I love asking people for money, because when it has an impact and an ROI that will benefit all Americans, why not? So that's the third thing that we do. So I think I'm probably making you proud, Eduardo. I've learned the lesson, three things we do. So just to recap, it is advocate, amplify, and fundraise to make sure that this museum is on the National Mall, funded properly, and it captures the great stories that represent the amazing contributions to history that American Latinos have brought for over 500 years. Did I miss something, Eduardo? That's what we do, right? But you've been doing a lot more from so many more years. I think it's good for Jerry and his listeners to know how messy and lengthy is the process to get stuff approved, because a lot of people look at us like, 20 years? Why have you been working so long on this? You have all the inside stories that are much better.
You've got it all down. The one thing that you didn't highlight was how much of a rock star you are and why you are doing what you're doing. As Jerry mentioned, you have to make sure the people that are driving an initiative like this are the people that have that gravitas, the platform, and the experience to communicate the urgency. I had the pleasure of meeting Lily several years ago at an event in New York. And from that first meeting, it was as if she had been a champion for the Latino Museum for years, barely gave her a few talking points. And she stood up in the middle of the dinner where she, the first time, had really gotten involved that day. And that night we hosted a dinner and she decided, I'm going to be a spokesperson, and said, I would like to say something. And I said, go for it. And did an amazing job of getting people really revved up. And that's what we've been about for 16 years of my life in running this campaign, making sure we pull talented, energetic people like Lily, who have standing, who have credibility, and have the network to get people's attention and bring people into the fold of building and opening the doors of this museum. You asked, who are the people behind this? They are people like Lily. There are people all over the country that we've been working with to make sure that we're not leaving anyone out. Because I will tell you, the number of times I've had my hand slapped for forgetting that within the Latino community, there are so many different segments. If we talk about the Latino community in Florida versus Texas versus California, everyone has their experience. Everyone has their view. And that's why it cannot be a campaign that is Washington, D.C. based and run. It has to be all about the network and influencers from all over the country, because that's really going to be the challenge of the Latino Museum when they open the doors, is telling how diverse our story is and making sure they don't get slapped on the wrist as many times as I have throughout my 16 years. You know, these are lessons learned that I'm happy to pass on. We have to share the stories and use talented and strong people like Lily and so many others to make it feel like this is your campaign.
Love it. And I love the advocate, amplify, fundraise. I couldn't stress that enough to the listeners. The third piece is huge. And we'll have information in the notes so you could click on there. And if you find it in your heart that you can donate a little dollar here or $5 there, it adds up. It's about legacy. And it's about, what are you doing to give back so that it lives on for generations to come? So that's very important for everyone to understand. But it's also personal. as you mentioned, 16 years. Lily, you've been for a few years now. It's personal. What's the personal side of it? Can you share a little bit about that? Because there's the business side, but also that personal side.
Absolutely. I'm going to challenge everyone here with one idea that I think was hinted at the beginning of our conversation. And that is the concept or idea that Spanish is an American language. When we start with that idea, it forces us to understand our American history. Why would someone say that Spanish is an American language or a U.S. language? We get indoctrinated to a certain extent from the first classroom that we were in as a child to understand what it means to be American. And along the way, we grow up thinking that there are certain things that we have to check the box on in order to truly be American. And I think if we understood our true American history and the diversity within that, it wouldn't be one or the other. It wouldn't be one checklist or criteria. It would be that diversity of experiences that defines being American. I'll finish up with this one thing. The reverse is also true. When we have gone to many large events around the country pre-pandemic, many times you start by saying, ¿Cuánto boricua? ¿Cuánto cubanos? ¿Cuánto colombianos? And people hoot and holler and cheer, and everyone raises their hands for their country of origin. But when I say, ¿Cuántos americanos? There's an awkward pause. Why? There shouldn't be an awkward pause. Everyone should say, aquí, americano, presente, right? Because if you truly understand the diversity of our country, then you wouldn't say English is the only language in the nation. And you wouldn't say, I'm just Peruvian. You'd say, I'm americano, and Spanish is an American language. That's what ultimately drives this whole thing for us personally. As you said, the question was, how personal is it? Those ideas are personal to me because it challenges the norms. People think this is about a brick and mortar museum. It's not. The museum is the embodiment of that narrative that we're trying to drive. The rest, it's not tangible. It's something that we have to move into people's minds and consciousness on what it means to be an American.
I will add another layer. So there is very sound and strong historical reasons that Eduardo just shared. I'm going to speak as a mom, which hopefully many other parents or all of us know a young Latino or Latina somewhere. And those little kids that I have at home are such a huge inspiration for me because I dream of the day when they get to walk in and see themselves in the stories and honor those that were before us, but be motivated to continue to be that next generation of change makers and history making American Latinos. So definitely that motivates me a lot. And just to know for a second that anything we're doing right now can forever impact who knows how many millions of people that will be walking through those hallways or watching it digitally from who knows where, all the way from Patagonia to somewhere in Canada, that it's just chilling and exciting. Because just as the entire world has embraced Latino culture in so many ways, the statistics are so fun with the fact that we sell more tortillas than bread in the United States. And still to this day, Despacito has broken every record there is worldwide in terms of the most streamed, most popular song ever around the world. And Bad Bunny was the most streamed Spotify artist of 2020. And the list kind of goes on and on. Well, I want everyone to fall in love with our history as much as they fall in love with our music everywhere and have our kids celebrate that and be proud.
I love both perspectives because it brings El Sueño Americano. Our familia came here to the dream, the American dream. So why deny that we're American? Yes, we are from our country too. We're just as proud, but it's okay to be proud and also be Americano. And the family piece, you're speaking about legacy when you talk about your kids, but this also stems from the personal side. It was planted. The seed was planted before you became los personajes que son, the people that are representing this movement. You started somewhere, those humble beginnings. So if you want to share a little bit about your culture, your upbringing, and most importantly, that person or those people in your family that were the ones that
without hesitation, they really were the ones that helped shape you into the leader you are today.
Everybody has a story and their own history to tell. I love that you're asking this question in the context of the museum, because in a way, we should be able to see and activate the emotions of our own stories that align to everyone that has made this great nation what it is, which has a lot of Latino influence all around. So in my case, it's really interesting because I have the typical recent immigrant American dream type story. I came to the U.S. at the age of 17 with a student visa in one hand and a suitcase in the other, not speaking a word of English, and my entire family stayed behind in Colombia. Now, to put it in context, that was the early 90s when, unfortunately, what you do see in Narcos, the Netflix show, was exactly the Colombia at the time. Now it's wonderful. Come visit. It's great. But it was what it was then. And my parents said, you know what? How about you go to the United States and learn how to speak English? So I wasn't technically going to be staying here. The excuse was go do ESL and come back. And I never went back. I came, I kind of got a taste of this. And just now as a mom, and just to think that I would send my 17-year-old kid to another country and just ship them there and leave them there was a crazy, brave, courageous decision. I don't know if I would do it. And it just goes to show how much wiser your parents are at the time, providing opportunities and overstretching what they had to afford me this opportunity. Now, in terms of shaping my background, I was the product of two very nerdy engineers. Both my mom and dad were the first to go to college in their generation and in their families. But my mom in particular, que en paz descanse, she was the only girl in her engineering class. So was already a trailblazer of her era. And I don't think I appreciated it until later in life. I just thought everybody's mom was some sort of engineer. And then I was like, wait, that's not normal. So she was so badass and had to fight so hard through stereotypes and what it meant to be a woman with a career in technology and the petroleum oil industry in Colombia. It was just so crazy. And then she found my dad, and I always saw them as a team, which was very unusual. When she passed away, a lot of people in her service was talking about the stories of how she was the first one to fight for maternity leave and started talking about equal pay and would get mad because she had to work two or three times harder to prove herself and all this stuff that I'm like, oh, wait, so I guess my mom was an advocate and like a badass feminist. And I had no idea she was until later. So it's kind of like the bittersweet moment that comes when somebody passes and you get to celebrate their life and learn stories you didn't even know. I now come to see how much she shaped me. My dad, too, who still lives, and he's an amazing guy. And the hard work, the putting all their value in education. You know, that's very Latino, right? Mija, estudia. It's like, yo no tengo dinero, pero te doy la educación. So it's typically, that's the currency, right? Education is the currency and the equalizer. And I think my mom's warrior spirit of proving other people wrong and being this advocate for others and fighter. I feel it more in me now, and I feel responsible to carry that on more so after she's left us and carry her spirit. So I believe in the American dream. I believe in the power of hard work. And yes, I know there are things in society and life that get in the way of access and opportunity, but I am maybe the optimist that does believe, maybe to a fault, that when there's a will, there's a way, que si se puede, and ask for help and plow through it and let your own results and performance demonstrate it. And it comes from that type of upbringing. So I tell the young kids, and I'll close with this, I have a cousin that maybe he's listening. Ooh, I'll make sure he does. His name is Juan Gil, and at barely 20-something years of age, he's already almost nominated for an Oscar. He's an amazing director, young filmmaker, and I told him one day when he was in college, I say, Juan, never, ever, ever, ever forget where you come from. And he says that that conversation made him start writing only Latino-inspired films. And here he is doing it in a big way. And he's in the middle of Hollywood right now. So why do I mention that? Because just as my mom and my parents never let me forget where I come from, pushed me to give it my best and never compromise performance or education. I try to pass that on to my primo, Juan, and what he's doing with filmmaking, but I'm hoping that I keep sprinkling that in more places. And this project, of course, is a ginormous responsibility and opportunity to do that. I'm very proud Latina, unapologetically Colombian, American, immigrant, all of the above, and a believer of Si Se Puede.
You've got a whole second podcast right there to expand on. I think that also illustrates how difficult it's going to be to bring a museum to the National Mall that presents stories so varied, but yet so connected, because Lily's experience was very different from mine. And yet X number of years later, because I'm not going to age either one of us, but X number of years later, we find ourselves tied together to a common cause, a shared mission, and a shared vision. My parents came here in the 60s from Peru. My father, unlike today's experience, one, he never wanted to come to the United States. He wanted to go to Spain. He had a cousin there at the time, and it was a very tumultuous time, unfortunately. So on the way home, there was a man standing outside the U.S. Embassy in Peru passing out applications. You can imagine that. People just saying, come to the United States. So he took an application and decided, I guess I'll go and give the United States a shot instead of Spain. That's something that's unheard of today, that you could just apply and land in the United States. The only place he knew that was somewhere for men to go was YMCA. Stayed there for 2 weeks. He got a letter in the mail, and I had a picture. It was a little card with a picture of him on it. And he didn't know what it was, and he kept it. Turns out it was a green card, just like that, for him to stay in the country. A completely different experience that he thinks about it, and he spent a lot of his life giving back because of how easy his arrival was and how he just happened to be in the right place at the right time. I spent most of my high school years on the couch in my house because my house was the port of entry from Peru to the United States. My cousins, my uncles, anyone wanted to come and start a life in the United States. We were the first stop. And so my room was the best place to put my cousins in, or my uncles or aunts, whoever needed it. That's the giving back, the nature of yo tengo algo, te lo doy, whatever you need, because we have not just a familial connection, but that shared desire to do better, to be better. My father was the first DJ on a Spanish language radio station in Washington, D.C. And his passion was siendo locutor, and he loved it. Ultimately, he found another passion in the travel industry, ended up owning several travel agencies as a wholesaler around the Northeast, all the way down to Florida. I ended up going to college in Miami because he had an office down there and he figured I could keep an eye on it. I ended up going to law school in New York because he had a small office there. He figured I could keep an eye on it, wherever he needed an extra set of eyes. It was an experience that was built in a lot of personal sacrifice from all of us. My father to this day talks about his success as something that everyone played a part in. I was a cashier in my mom's bookstore. As soon as I could operate the cash register, I sold newspapers on the street. I was sitting on top of Washington Post, stacked up high in front of my mom's bookstore on Sunday. As people walked by, they gave me a dollar and I'd give them the Washington Post. I did that and more because it wasn't my dad's business. It was my family's business. It was our business. And I think he's right. When I reflect on it now, I really do think like we all pitched in to get by, to be able to build on what he was able to start. And I think that that experience for me really bled into the work that I do today. I try to pass on to my kids, whatever I have, whatever we have, is not really ours. It's everyone's, right? Because esto no me lo voy a llevar. Todo aquí está prestado. In the end, we are here for a moment in time, and whatever we can leave that is positive is the very least that we can do. The initiative for an American Latino Museum is very similar, except that it's not just to leave something good, but it's to not forget what everyone has done. It's to record the experiences of a young Lily coming to the United States, of her cousin as a filmmaker, of the impact that we've all had in some way to make our nation, as amazing as it is, sadly, so many of these stories have been forgotten. So many of them now live in the attics, under the beds, in the garages, boxes, collecting dust. We have an amazing opportunity. And I think that the people that really get it and really are passionate about this also come from that background that we have individually shared here, that a lot comes from sacrifice and lo poco que tenemos, damos. That's the opportunity that we have here, is to continue to see what can be in this American Latino Museum, because that culture that we have of giving as much as we can to build something greater.
And now a word from our host, Giraldo Luis. Did you know, sabías que, Latino history will finally have a home. In December 2020, thanks to bipartisan support from Congress, the National Museum of the American Latino Act was approved. This bill establishes the National Museum of the American Latino in the Smithsonian Institution. Countless years of hard work by the Friends of the National Museum of the American Latino made this possible. Pero, there's still plenty of work to be done. We need your help ahora to raise awareness that the museum is on the National Mall and for Congress to allocate the approved appropriations. Go to AmericanLatinoMuseum.org to learn more and donate what you can to help this become a reality for our future generations. Ya tú sabes. Now back to the show.
I love this because I can relate with both of you, and I feel there's a common thread with all Latinx, Latinos, Hispanos, Latinas. I say it all. I know some people feel a certain way about the term Hispanic. People feel a word about Latino, Latina, Latinx. Look, put the labels to the side. We're a movement. We're people. We're human beings. Yes, now the term is Latinx, Latinx. I embrace all of them.
This is a question that comes up a lot, and I don't think it should be as controversial. I appreciate what you said. You said, and I quote, I say it all, Latinx, Hispano. And I think you have to do that. If you truly do respect the identity of your fellow man, woman, them, you shouldn't say, oh yeah, no, we're Latinx. Oh yeah, no, we're Hispanic. Because identity is so important. I can't go to South Texas or to Southern California and say, we're all Latino here, if they feel, no, Chicano. Because Chicano is a very specific experience of the Latino community in the United States. The same as a Boricua, why doesn't he just call himself Puerto Rican? No, somos Boricua. The New Yorkans, a very specific experience. And so I have found through this experience of running a campaign that has to travel to different parts of the country to be very cognizant that people have an established identity. I am not there to tell them, this is who we are, so we can go into the American Latino Museum. I am here to learn from them on how they see themselves and how that may one day be in an American Latino Museum. When I'm in Florida, people don't want to hear about the Cesar Chavez farm worker movement. When I'm in Texas, the Mexican-American experience will say, will have said to me, oh, no, this is going to be a museum to apologize for the Spanish and make them seem like the Spanish were la última chupa del mango, como decimos, ¿no? Everyone has an idea of what this museum could be. You have to respect that and at the same time move them closer to the middle so that we can get this done together. But I can't start by saying, no, somos todos Latinos or somos todos Hispanics, whatever the brand is. You can't put a community as diverse as this in one box.
I'm glad you chimed in because that is absolutely 1,000%. You're right. We talk about that sueño americano. My parents came here, sacrificed everything from Cuba, were separated intentionally by the government in Cuba. My dad went to Spain. My mom came here intentionally to break up that bond, but the love was too strong. I'm a product of that sacrifice, my sister and I. God bless my parents. It's been more than 50 years they came here. Todo es posible. And I think all these stories, it's important because we bring it back to this Latino museum we're talking about. These are the stories.
Many times we talk about the museum as important to educate everyone about the Latino community. And many times we have to stop and say, well, actually, we also needed to educate ourselves. We ourselves are deficient in the full understanding of the U.S. Latino experience and how different that is, because we know our own stories, perhaps, but we don't know our neighbor's stories, the other kids that we grew up with were Latino as well, or Latina. And I think the one thing I learned about museums is that one of the purposes of having a museum is that it helps identify a shared experience. No matter who comes in those doors, the museum ultimately helps illustrate a shared experience, which does serve to bring people together. And our experiences may be different in the Latino community. We don't learn more about each other. I think that only keeps us that much further apart.
That's exactly right. To me, the power of what unifies us as a community is so, so, so strong. Beyond the cliches and Latinos rah-rah, we proved that, demonstrated it towards the end of last year when we are all pushing through to try to get this bill approved. So let me put it in context. And this is back into behind the curtain, the process to getting this bill into the law that it is today. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in an election year. The left points to the right points to the left. Something crazy that happens because it's the nation and the context that we're living in. And at the time of focusing on COVID relief bills and approvals and budgets and surviving small businesses, everything that came with the year 2020. And in the middle of all of that, we needed to get a bill passed. How crazy is that? So where am I going with my long ramble? To me, a huge testament of the fact that we can rise above the narrative of division is with the power of our culture. Because if you look in the fall, you would see the most progressive organizations, as well as the most conservative ones, Latinos, all saying the same thing on their Twitter posts, because we were all trying to get this bill approved. It didn't matter the political affiliation. And that to me gives me chills and maybe hope for society and the world that there are things that unify us. And to me, it was so inspiring to see our sponsors, both Democrats and Republicans, pushing up the same ball uphill for this to be done. Now, I reflect on that because back to the point on unity, and there could be a million things we could sit and debate and separate us about. But to Eduardo's point on that shared experience and the love for culture and the love for wanting to tell a complete telling of American history, was able to get the most conservative and the most progressive groups both posting the same thing at the same time in unison, because we both wanted this thing approved. And we did it. And the kinds of conversations that happen behind the scenes of influence, of convincing, of advocating and amplifying were really inspiring. And I feel that deserves a whole documentary of how it happened.
Hold on. We got Juan, if you're listening, and I know you are, documentary.
My cousin. But seriously, truly, truly, truly bipartisan. In a year that anyone would have said, heck no, you're not going to get that approved. There's so much going on. It happened.
As soon as the 2016 election happened, we were touring that next summer around the country and telling people, Latino Museum, gotta get the legislation. And some of these leading voices around the country would come up to me and say, you're crazy. It's not going to get done. Not under this administration. Not under this environment, not with all the rhetoric that we're seeing right now that was so hostile towards the Latino community. It was amazing. And I think that based on my just general cynicism, having worked in DC for so long, I was like, I'm going to keep going because I know the machine. You just keep pushing, something's going to crack, and then you just jump on it. And I'm not saying at all that it was because of skill or anything from my part. I think it was just everything that Lily just said, it was happening. People gravitated to this one good thing. This was positive. This is positive. This was something that wasn't about the left or right. It was about American history, patriotism, a full accounting of the contributions of Americans from Latino backgrounds, Hispanic backgrounds, just giving to making the nation as great as it is. People of various ideologies said, I get that. I totally agree with that. No problem. I'm going to tell you, there were some conservatives in the House that are far right that signed on to this, that I looked at the list of members and I was like, what? Are you serious? But hey, I took it. I was like, great, love it. that's what this was about. And that's how we came together. We brought amazing people. And La Madrina, Ileana Ross Lehnin, una tremenda campeona, first Latina elected to Congress, period. And she joined us in the last stretch.
She was shaking every Republican tree she could because she's a Republican. She was hilarious, so powerful and unapologetic, like plowing through. So Ileana, if you're listening, you're a badass because she is. But it takes that. I think to me, that was so inspiring. This gives me hope for America and the fact that there are enough things that bind us together and moves us to the core to get the work done. So this museum has already demonstrated it in a very difficult year to get it signed and approved with bipartisan support. And when you look at the list of supporters, to Eduardo's point, you see every political spectrum from the most extreme left to right, all supporting it, which is so cool.
I will add to your story, Lily, Mike Lee. You know, it's amazing because things happen for a reason, no? Las cosas pasan. And as much as that was outrageous for us, it really was a springboard that we needed. To have that common enemy did a lot for us in 24 to 48 hours that we were not able to achieve before that. Everyone on the right and the left said, you're wrong. U.S. Latino history is important.
You look up adversity, you got to look up this experience in December. More about both of you. There was an instance in your life, and I'm sure there's many of adversity that you overcame. What is something else that you questioned, but you had that influence from your parents? You want to share a quick story on that?
It makes me think about how I ended up where I am professionally. My dad had this amazing attitude and approach to business and work. He said, oh, we should do this. And then he would just go and find a way to do it, to get it done. And there was always some college-educated person who would come around and say, well, first you have to file this article of incorporation, and then you have to do this, and maybe have to, you know, separate your wealth from your personal wealth from your business wealth. All these traditional, very smart ideas. And my dad's like, no. That's okay. I'm just going to go do it my way, right? He just kept going and he succeeded. It wasn't probably the most polished way, but it was his way to get things done and move forward. And it was interesting because it wasn't until much, much later in my life that I realized I took that approach as a first generation Latino. I didn't know how to go about the college process. My high school didn't have this great program to understand how to go through that process. I sure as hell didn't know how to go through the process to get into law school. And once I got into law school, I didn't know what to do there. But I knew that I had to just do it. People ask me, what are you going to do after college? I'm going to go to law school. What are you going to do? I don't know, but I'm going to go to law school. It just seems ridiculous now that I was so ill-prepared. But I did have a commitment, that stubbornness, that it's not going to be perfectly clean and polished, but I'm going to get there and I'm going to do it. And I think that has continued with me throughout everything that I do. It doesn't matter if there's a hurricane, we're just going to keep going. We did it. It's something that you have to really marvel at because I think anybody would say, yeah, put a pause on it, wait till this is over and then try again. Pero uno nunca sabe. And that means you should never stop and you should never give up. Porque uno nunca sabe.
Amen.
People ask me, how did you go from being a corporate executive to business owner, entrepreneur? Because it seems like it was a very difficult decision. The story behind the story, which you read it on a bio and sounds very noble and like, that's so brave. That's so cool. A lot of people don't realize that when I made that shift, besides jumping into an opportunity I saw in the business world, was the fact that I had recently had two losses. I had lost my mom and I was going through a painful divorce. And now I talk about it openly, especially with young women, because you never know the force that adversity can have or pain. Because when you look at it and realize that maybe that was happening not to me as a victim, but for me to kick in a new gear or explore a rebirth, almost a new genesis, then I would have never been doing what I'm doing now. I probably would have continued in my big old corporate career. I was at Johnson & Johnson at the time in a very big global marketing position. it looks very comfortable and very right for the resume and the bio. So when I decided to leave, it seemed very backwards. And it was the best thing I've done. And now J&J is one of my clients and many others. That point was an opportunity to reassess what really mattered to me. And it made me realize that beyond chasing a title, which was what I was doing in my 20s, my goal was to be in some sort of corporate C-suite before 40. That was literally my goal as a very one-track mind young person. And then realize that that's unfulfilling, that there's no amount of money or title that will ever give you satisfaction. And when you're going through a loss, it forced me to reevaluate, what do I want to do in the world? Could I impact more than one corporation and really activate this whole thing of cultural intelligence, not just in one place, but in many others? And sure enough, that's what I do now. But it took a painful moment to stop, reassess, recalibrate purpose, and make the pivot, which now affords me to do what I do in my corporate influence that ironically I feel is much bigger and more effective than having stayed in just one corporate circle. So that was it. Transformative moment for sure. Very humbling, but I wouldn't change it ever, as painful as it felt at the time.
We are happy that you move forward. Siempre, as we say, siempre pa'lante, always forward. That is it. That defines who you are. That defines who S is. To kind of finish off over here, legacy is important. And you've talked about your involvement with the Latino Museum. But to take it a little step further, what are some of the things you're doing that you would like to shed some light on?
The work that we do with CN is bringing data analytics and business strategy to the biggest companies in the world. Even if they don't ask us to do so, we always steer them to the path of impact. So we really believe in pushing forward purposeful profits, meaning you can drive the bottom line, increase your market share, increase your profitability as a corporation, Google, Pepsi, Kellogg's, Nestle, the people we work with, but at the same time, do it in a way that is changing and impacting community. So I think every single day as a company and in the work we do, we are weaving impact and purpose into the initiatives that are meant to be very commercial and very businessy. But even if they don't ask, we put it in. So that's one mindset. And I tell that to my team all the time. We have to weave purpose even if they don't think they need it. But on a personal side, and this is very, very new, I think you guys are going to be the first ones to hear it out loud. When I came to this country, my parents sent me to this little teeny tiny Christian college in Texas. It's called Southwestern Adventist University, like population 2000, literally in the town. There's four traffic lights and that's it. At the time, I was like one of the few Latinas. It felt really hard. It's in North Texas. People thought I was Mexican, but I was Colombian. I had this whole thing going through. It was hard. And I used to go back to the dorm and cry. I couldn't speak English. Fast forward now, almost 30 years later, Southwestern Adventist University is now a Hispanic serving institution with more than 50% of the students being Latino. And when I learned that, my jaw dropped because that was definitely not me at the time. Talk about shifting demographics in 30 years. And not only that, but they ranked number two nationwide in social mobility, which means their ability to enroll first-time college students and graduate them and get them jobs has them at a number two ranking nationwide. So when I found these numbers and reconnected with my college there, we created a Hispanic Leadership Scholarship Fund. We're going to be supporting now, and it's an endowment that, God willing, will continue for many years, making sure we spot those juniors and seniors that have high potential, low resources, and all they need is a little extra push to make sure they get their dreams accomplished. So it's called the Aurora Hispanic Leadership Fund because my mom's middle name was Aurora. And Aurora means the opening of opportunity, possibility, the light comes out. And we are literally launching that this semester. It's starting. So that's what we're doing for these students. By the way, S's organization, the Rabin Group, keeps being ranked as one of the top lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and I'm always so proud to see them on that list. But I need your help because they're an HSI. They don't even know how much power they have with that, ranking number two nationwide. And I keep telling them, guys, there's so much opportunity. President Biden just said there's a big portion of it dedicated for institutions like you. And they're like, really? I'm like, yes, we got to tap into that. It's just, we need to figure out how to continue to help schools like this, where the students that maybe are not giving a shot in other places are given personalized attention. So long answer to your question, but I can't believe we have a scholarship fund, but we do. And I say we because it's my husband and I and my friends, because as an endowment, I can have everybody pitch in and keep it going. And we just started it this year. So I'm so excited about that.
One thing that I try to pass on to many of my peers and others that have come up behind me is time. You have to make time for people who want to know how you do what you do, how you succeeded here and there. Obviously, we're all still on our paths, but to someone else, we have succeeded in a way that they would like to. And time is so important. And that could be a basic coffee. Pre-pandemic, I did a lot more of those. During the pandemic, I've done a lot of Zooms, a lot of phone calls, just trying to share information. And that mentoring opportunity is something that I love to do, because eventually you find out where some of these folks are. As long as I've been doing this 16 some years, it's just amazing to see where people end up. If you can be part of that story in some small way, then that's your legacy. You get to live on through their experience. And when they recount how they got wherever they got, if you're blessed enough for them to say, someone spent time with me, someone gave me advice, they mention you, that's your legacy. Right. And so I've been part of nonprofits. I volunteer my time. I do the blood drives. I teach. I coach soccer for the first time, and I'm terrible at soccer. So, you know, that's crazy. And I help kids through that. But out of everything else that I do, I honestly believe that the time I spend talking to that next generation about the work and about how to get ahead in this kind of progressive policy advocacy industry, I think that's what I enjoy the most and what I'm proud of.
Gracias, Estuardo y Lily, for educating our listeners on this great initiative and sharing your story. For all my listeners, don't forget to rate and review the show. 5 stars and a little love go a long way. Check the show notes for more info on where you can find our guests via social media. Next week, we have CEO of Aurora Communications, Latina pioneer, journalist, musician, cultural historian, and activist, Aurora Flores. Tune in and tell a friend. Hasta la próxima. Pa'lante.